Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. This week, I'm talking with UI, UX designer, and animator, Ayanna Campbell-Smith. Ayanna and I chat about how she was destined for her career, with a mom who's a designer and a dad who's a developer, her methods of building design systems to help increase her productivity, starting a YouTube channel to teach design and UI, UX animation after Epicurrent's Winter Work Week, and more, all right after this.
It's no secret that I love Jack Prince. They're a longtime sponsor of the podcast and Creative South. Plus, they do great work. Whether they're making our pop-up displays and tablecloths or printing notebooks, Jack Prince is always there when we need them. This year, they are printing new Creative South t-shirts for me and the podcast stickers. They have a coupon code on the back that gives you a great discount on all of their products, just in time for Creative South. Speaking of stickers, Jack Prince will print any kind, shape, size, or stock, including full-color stickers with full-color liner prints, for you to use as product labels, promotions, bumper stickers, hang tags, business cards, and more. Right now, you can get 500 3x3-inch die-cut stickers, starting at $149. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South Podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code SOUTH15OFF at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. If you like the Creative South Podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, a shout out on the podcast thanking you for your support, Creative South Podcast stickers and t-shirts. So please help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Ayanna, thanks for joining me tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So we're talking before Creative South, but yours episode will be going up after Creative South. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to meet you / have already met you. how the magic of time travel works.
Well, yeah.
Why don't we kind of jump in from the beginning? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Orlando, Florida. That's where I currently live too. So born and raised, a true Floridian.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So when you were, what type of kid were you growing up? Were you arty kid, sporty kid?
Yeah, definitely. I was definitely an arty kid. I was always doing arts and crafts. And it's funny, when I was thinking about this, I figured you would ask a question like that. And I was thinking back to what I did as a child, and I was very into making friendship bracelets and crocheting and doing stained glass, like little kits you can get from craft stores. Like, sure. I did a lot of stuff. I wouldn't say I was really into drawing, surprisingly, but I was definitely a crafty kid growing up, very creative.
Gotcha. Yeah. were your parents pretty encouraging of that?
Yeah, definitely. My mom is actually pretty creative too. She actually started out after high school. She went to cosmetology school. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of crafty or creative in a different way, but she's definitely very creative too. And she actually works as a freelance graphic designer also.
Oh, wow.
Or not also, but you know, that's what she does. I kind of was raised into it a little bit. So she's creative. And then my dad actually has a degree in computer science. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of in the middle, cause I do web design and like product design. So I kind of got the best of both worlds growing up.
So you got the art and the nerd going on.
Yeah, that's pretty much me.
Gotcha. When you got into school, and I remember when I sent out the questionnaire, you mentioned, I think it was in middle school, you had a project where you had to work on a magazine or something like that. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I was in a gifted class in middle school. My teacher, Miss Carswell, I believe was her name. She gave us an assignment to basically create a Time magazine cover of us. I believe it was 20 years in the future. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to create a magazine cover of me, as the first, I think it was the first female president 20 years later in the future. Which is funny, cause I don't think I ever really wanted to be president, but it just seemed like something I was supposed to do. But yeah, with that project, it was interesting because when I turned it in, I realized that mine was really different from my classmates because a lot of theirs was done in either PowerPoint or Word or programs like that. And I actually did mine in Quark Express, which I don't know if people really know what that is anymore. But
I remember it well.
Yeah, so I did it in Quark Express. It was full color, full bleed, double-sided. I like staged a photo shoot with me and my little brother, and I took photos for it. I made the assets, and you know, I don't remember exactly how it actually came together. I think I actually did the design on it too. My mom might have helped me, but yeah, I think I was 12 years old then.
Oh,
wow. So this is kind of like a moment where I realized, hey, and I kind of have something going here, and my stuff is a little different from my classmates. So,
well, and you've only got a few years left until you have to be elected president. So
I think that dream is over for me now.
Don't want that job now, right?
Yeah, no, I don't want that job. I like my job.
So as you continued through school and like high school and all, were you seeking out more art classes at that point, or when did you really educationally get into it?
Yeah, definitely. So I was really lucky, like I mentioned before, that my mom, she kind of got into graphic design during a time when I was really impressionable, and I was able to grasp the concepts of, you know, design and the programs, but I was still young enough to be curious and really want to explore and on my own. So
sure.
I was definitely doing design stuff on my own, just using a scanner and making, you know, magazine covers and little crazy logos and stuff. But once I got to high school, I did take some graphic design classes. The first high school that I went to actually had a graphic design program. So there were a couple classes I could take. Mm-hmm. And then it's hard for me to remember because I went to two different high schools, but I know somewhere in there I took graphic design classes. And then I also took some web design classes where I learned coding.
Okay.
Which going into that, I already had some experience too because of my dad.
Right.
So I was a mix of everything. Like I liked photography, and I would go online and inspect the source code on different websites and basically learn how to build portfolio pages for my crappy photography and my self portraits and stuff. So
sure. Just the average thing that a 16, 17 year old does.
Yeah. You know,
check out the source code.
So, yeah, that's pretty much how I got into it. And it's just continued on from there, obviously. So
when you got out of high school, did you end up going to college?
I did.
Mm-hmm. What did you end up focusing on?
So I focused on graphic design. Mm-hmm. I have a BFA in, technically it's a BFA in art with a specialization in graphic design. That's just what they called it at UCF where I went, the sure. University of Central Florida. Yeah, I majored in graphic design. That program is really focused on print design. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my products were focused around print, but it wasn't until later in my college career that I realized that I wanted to focus more on like web and digital medias. So, yeah.
Gotcha. When you were there, was Victor Villa there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He was my teacher. Love
okay.
him.
So, excuse me. So, since they were so print heavy focused and you were, you know, kind of in the thick of that, how did you start branching out into more web-based stuff? How did you, I mean, obviously, thankfully you've got your dad who's a good resource for that. Mm-hmm. You've got your mom who's, you know, good resource for the design side of things. Mm-hmm. But how did you start picking up on it initially?
So I think the biggest thing that influenced me to pursue digital or web stuff as opposed to being a print designer is that my senior year of college, I took an internship at a local marketing agency.
Okay.
And so it's funny because I applied for the position not really knowing that I was going to be working in the interactive department, which was basically their department that handled like websites and designs and stuff like that.
Sure.
But it ended up being a great thing for me because that was kind of an eye-opening experience for me when I realized that, you know, this was a job that I could have because I forgot to mention. So I entered UCF as a web design major.
Okay.
And basically web design to them meant web developer.
Sure.
So it was a lot of coding. So I had a 7:30 a.m. computer science class at one point early on. I think it was my freshman year and it was really tough for me. And I was just like, you know, I can't live my life coding and being stressed out all the time. I had a lot of
especially at 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that really didn't help. But I had a lot of teachers that were just not very helpful in my opinion. And so I I think after that semester is when I actually made the switch to graphic design. I dropped the web design major and I switched over to graphic design.
Okay.
So in the back of my head, I always knew that I wanted to work in web as a designer, but I didn't know how to articulate what that was because I didn't know the difference between web designer and web developer. Mm-hmm. But when I took that internship at the agency that I mentioned, I was paired up with this really great girl named Megan Ryan, who still today I consider her to be one of my best mentors that I've had so far. But she oversaw that department and she really, you know, spoke into me and really showed me the ropes and, you know, showed me how I could have a career in web design, mm-hmm. That I always wanted. So that experience working at that agency for those 6 months, my senior year, was really integral in, you know, sort of shaping me to be who I am today, I feel like.
Gotcha. When you were doing this internship, what did they have you working on that really opened your eyes? And specifically, what was she mentoring you in that made you want to do it? Sorry. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. So we worked on, it was literally working on websites, like designing websites for clients. I wasn't actually doing the, you know, like the main pages that the clients would see in presentations, but I was doing like the supplementary pages, basically taking the styles that my mentor Megan had already laid out and building out additional pages with that same style. And as we were doing that, she would give me pointers and tips about, you know, type hierarchy and, font choices and colors and everything that I really needed to know as far as laying out websites. Mm-hmm. 'Cause like I said, I had worked on building websites before, but it was mainly just stealing people's code and like reusing it for my own benefit. I had never actually worked on a website, like start to finish in Photoshop and then handing it off to a developer.
Sure.
And so it's funny, after that, I was actually in the middle of my senior project at UCF while I was taking that internship. And basically what that project is that we had to produce a number of items revolving around like a campaign. It was a project of our choice, but we had to produce a specific number of items. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of being in that internship, I actually went to Victor and I said, hey, I want to change my project. I want to focus it to be more on like app and web design because I'm in this internship and I realize that this is what I want to do and I want this in my portfolio when I graduate. Mm-hmm. So I completely changed my project in the middle of my senior year, my last semester before graduating.
So, So, A, how did that go? Because that's not a stressful time at all in the life of a college student. Mm-hmm. So how did that go for you?
It actually went really well because I think I realized the previous project that I was working on, I was trying to do branding. Mm-hmm. Branding is not something that I particularly enjoy, but I kind of think I was in a mindset of that's what you do when you're a designer.
Sure.
When you're a print designer, you work on brands. And so I was kind of forcing myself to create these brands and these branding campaigns for my project. But once I switched, everything just really flowed out of me because it was what I wanted to be doing. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get it done in no time. I don't remember being stressed out because at the end of the day, it was what I wanted to do. So.
Gotcha.
Worked out well for me.
Gotcha. And during this time, especially with the internship and all, you mentioned the fact that you were able to work with developers. Did that help you kind of learn how to speak their language and translate between the two worlds?
Yeah, definitely. It's still something that I'm still learning every day, honestly, but it definitely was a good introduction to knowing, you know, I had never known what a style guide was before and that that's something that developers need to be able to build the design. So, definitely seeing the collaboration between the two different worlds when it comes to web design was integral also in, you know, helping me learn. But yeah, it was all a learning experience, all really good stuff.
Gotcha. After the internship ended, what did you do? Because you still got a little bit of time left in school. What were you doing then, aside from, you know, obviously wrapping up senior projects and stuff like that?
So my internship actually went up until, I believe it was the week that I was graduating.
Oh, okay.
So it was literally in the last semester of me being there. So I stayed there until pretty much the end. Then I graduated, and I think I might have stayed another week or two after I graduated there, just helping out. Unfortunately, they weren't able to offer me a full-time position, so I kind of had a little mini freak out and didn't really know what I was going to do because I was just so I was in such a mindset of thinking that they were going to hire me or be able to hire me that I hadn't really thought of a plan B.
What you were going to do next. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, so, when I commit to things, I'm fully committed. Like I only applied to one college because I knew that's where I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really have a plan B, but luckily going back to Megan and how awesome she is, she was actually able to refer me to another agency that was looking to hire, like a junior level designer.
Okay.
So within, I believe it was within 2 weeks of not getting hired at the first place, I actually was starting another job with another digital agency, which was actually probably a better fit for me because they focus completely on digital, digital designs and websites and marketing and stuff like that. So.
Gotcha. And mm-hmm. what was the name of that place?
The second one?
Yes.
It was Purple Rock Scissors.
Oh, okay.
In Orlando.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with them. So yeah. How long were you there and what were you doing?
I was there for about, I think it was 8 to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working on a lot of websites. So I did a couple websites for like, you know, small universities, a couple for like hospitality industry type things, some local medical, like hospitals in the area. So I had a wide variety of stuff that I worked on, and I definitely learned a lot there too. I feel like every job that I've had, I just have learned so much.
Sure.
As far as, you know, me being a designer personally and then what it takes to be a good web designer.
Mm-hmm.
So every experience has been great that I've had.
So after you're there, is that when you move on to Envy?
Mm-hmm. So after that, I moved on to Envy because I realized, as much as I liked working on the websites there, I really, got to the point where I realized that I wanted to work more on web products as opposed to marketing sites or brochure sites.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Envy specializes in. They build training platforms and data visualization platforms for the web. So that's just what I wanted to do. So
for people who aren't familiar with the difference, walk me through what the difference is between a web product versus just a standard website or a brochure site.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell you my version of it and how sure. I understand it. I don't know if it's the industry standard definition, but the way that I see it is that a marketing site is meant to advertise a product or something like that. So if you think of like a website for a hotel or like an e-commerce site, maybe those are sites that are advertising a product or an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I see web products is if you think of things like Facebook or Pinterest or other applications like that, it's basically like an application that's within the web that you use. Mm-hmm. You input information in there and you gain stuff from it. But that's how I see it. And then a lot of, like I said, Envy does a lot of educational platforms. So if you think of things like Code School and training programs on the web,
mm-hmm.
that's the field that I really wanted to get into. And Envy was the perfect fit. And there was an opening at the time when I was ready to look for a new position. So it just worked out really well for me.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been there for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm. I think I just celebrated 3 years there recently.
Okay. And mm-hmm. during their time there, how do you think you've grown as a designer and as someone, as a communicator?
I've definitely grown as a communicator as far as dealing with clients directly, because at my previous jobs, we always had like a project manager or a producer that we would basically be the middleman between us and the client. They would advocate on our behalf,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, communicate on our behalf. But at Envy, Envy was formed basically as a group of freelancers.
Okay.
And so the way that the company is structured, it's kind of like we all have ownership of the project. And so everything from start to finish, as far as design goes, it goes through me. We have a project manager that helps us along with stuff and helps us with timelines and keeping, you know, our hours on track. But as far as communicating with the client and sharing our designs and stuff, that's all on my shoulders.
Okay.
So it's definitely been a learning experience as far as, you know, taking on more responsibility when it comes to the design process, but it's all been stuff that's welcome. And I feel like it's really helped me too, as far as being able to be an effective communicator with clients and stuff like that.
Gotcha. When, you know, what else has it in that setup where you have almost complete ownership over the product that you're working on?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work as far as
getting feedback and the kind of the internal structure of all that stuff before the client sees it?
Yeah. So since we do have a small team, it actually makes it really helpful as far as doing internal reviews and stuff like that too. So, so I'm responsible for, you know, wireframing and design and all that stuff, but it never ends with just me. So before I deliver anything to a client, we always have pretty thorough internal reviews and everyone is able to share their feedback. And since I work with so many great developers, you know, they're able to give me feedback about things that I wouldn't even know about as far as like the technical side goes.
Gotcha.
So, it's a really tight group. There's only, I believe there's 14 of us now. Mm-hmm. So if need be, like we could pull the entire company into a room and have a review. That doesn't happen often, but you know, it's completely possible given our size.
Sure. So when you're doing it, like you said, you're building out the wireframes and you're building out the design. Mm-hmm. Are you doing, you know, from ground up design, or is it you're doing building out that general style, that look, and then you have somebody who helps with production on subsequent pages and things that deeper dive in?
No, it's the first option. It's completely ground up. I'm responsible for everything. So wires, UX, mobile responsive designs, every page, everything that we hand off to the client it's my responsibility.
Sure. So, you know, with that type of design, and there's so many different facets, like you said, there's, you know, you've got the website where you're going to see that application, then you've got mobile, and each mobile, you know, device and platform has different specs and all of that. How are you upfront kind of wrapping your head around how everything's going to work and how everything's going to look to keep it as uniform as possible between devices?
I think it's definitely important to have a really robust style guide and design system in place, which is something that I've actually recently been researching and exploring more as far as like how bigger companies and bigger products handle their design systems. Mm-hmm. And I've, within the last year, I've been looking more also into really improving my productivity and efficiency as far as how I design. And so I'm not redoing a lot of the things over and over again. So using, you know, symbols and sketch, using their libraries, things like that, just anything that I can do to make my job more productive and not waste time.
Sure.
It's been really interesting to me lately. And I wrote an article about some stuff that I learned in Sketch recently, just to share some stuff that I've learned. But yeah, that's pretty much how I handle it. It's just having that design system in place and keeping it updated and communicating as much as possible.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. When you pass things off to the developers, you know, how much feedback back and forth is there and how much revision work goes into tweaking the final product?
After the handoff to the developer, there usually isn't a lot of revisions because they've been pretty heavily involved during the design process. Like they've seen everything that I've been working on pretty much. Mm-hmm. There might be some times when they'll come to me and let me know that maybe something got overlooked or that they need some additional designs for something. But in general, if it's a product where we're designing it in-house and also building it in-house, there usually isn't too much back and forth as far as revisions after it's been handed off.
Gotcha.
And all the developers are directly across the table from me, so it's not
you can just throw a piece of paper at it.
Yeah, we're all in the same room.
Well, that does make things easier.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, during your time there, you've also had the opportunity to do a lot of different side projects and things like that. And I want to get to the YouTube channel in a minute, but I want to kind of walk through some of the other things that you've had the opportunity to do. And I know, and I'm blanking on what it is, but there was something with like Design Orlando or
Orlando Creators.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. This is what happens when you get old and don't have enough caffeine. You start to forget things with Orlando Creators. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was a fun project. So at Envy, one of the things that they really value also is betterment time and self-improvement and education. Mm-hmm. And so whenever we have some downtime, we're always encouraged to kind of pursue projects that can uplift the community or be a benefit to someone else.
Okay.
And so that project in particular, I was interested in learning more about animation with After Effects. Mm-hmm. And then my coworker Drew, who unfortunately is no longer with us, he was interested in learning some web technologies that he wanted to try out. And so we both happened to have free time at the same time. And so we kind of sat in a room one day and brainstormed and tried to figure out what we could do and landed on this interview series that basically spotlights Orlando design talent. So we haven't really been able to produce more episodes, unfortunately, because Drew moved to Colorado. So it's
About to ask when you said he's no longer with us.
Yeah.
It was like, by no longer with us, what do you mean by that?
No. He's
alive. He just moved.
He's alive. He's still around. He just, him and his wife, who are great, they recently, well, at the beginning of this year, I believe, they moved to Colorado. So
okay.
It's been kind of on hiatus for now, and I've gotten busy because it's kind of like a side project, as you know, so it's not something that I'm going to prioritize over client work.
Sure.
So it's definitely something that I hope to continue in the future. And I know people are really excited about it, but right now it's just on pause, unfortunately. But it's definitely been a lot of fun and a learning experience as far as me doing animation and, you know, spotlighting talent locally.
So what was it about spotlighting local talent that spoke mm-hmm. to you that made you want to do that?
I think our main thing was that there are so many other cities, like bigger name cities that, where people know the design community there.
Sure.
And both Drew and I felt like Orlando had so much talent that's on par with a lot of these big cities that we wanted to do what we could to sort of spotlight and show people beyond our city who we have here. Because we have huge names like Clark Orr lives in Orlando. Mm-hmm. Anna Bond of Rifle Paper Company lives in Orlando. We have Shauna Panchezin, the hand letter. All people that I believe have spoken at Creative South in some capacity, not Anna, but Clark and Shauna, I'm pretty sure have both.
Yep. They've both
spoken.
Been.
Yeah. So we have so much talent in Orlando and we just wanted to do what we could to sort of highlight, the people there. And, I'm not sure how far it's spread, but any chance that we could get to spread people's names around further than our own community would be a bonus for us. So.
Gotcha. And you said mm-hmm. when you were working on this, you were doing animations and things like mm-hmm. that. Is that something you had done previously or?
I had done some small stuff, like little assets to use, on stuff I was working on at work, but I had never actually done anything that was like video quality or that I would want to put in a video.
Sure.
Cause everything that I know in After Effects is pretty much self-taught using YouTube videos and just stuff I've looked up online. I wasn't able to take After Effects in college, unfortunately. So it's always been something that I'm interested in as far as, adding more life to the illustrations that I do, but it, mm-hmm. this served as a really good opportunity to actually take time and sit down and learn some stuff and really, you know, make something that was presentable that people could actually look at and enjoy.
Sure.
So,
mm-hmm. so obviously that's, like you said, on hiatus at the moment, but mm-hmm. you know, what are some other fun things that you've had the opportunity to dabble in through doing side projects?
So I feel like all my side projects are going to be related to Envy in some way. just because, okay. like I said, they're so good at giving us time to work on things that we're interested in.
Sure.
Most recently, Drew, who I just mentioned, and I also collaborated on an AR augmented reality app
okay.
for tracking the location of the International Space Station. And so what cool. I did for that project is I was able to take some time to learn Blender 3D, which is a free 3D software program similar to, I think it's similar to Cinema 4D, but it's free. Uh-huh. People may call me out for saying it's similar. I'm not sure. I don't really know what the differences are, but yeah, I was able to take some time a couple of weeks there and learn how to model in that program. And then Drew was able to take the model that I built and basically import it somehow into code and do some other code magic and make it an app.
Some black magic.
Yeah, some stuff that I'm not really sure what he did, but it looks cool. So we did that recently. And I'm trying to think of some other stuff I've done. I feel like those are the two biggest ones that I'm most proud of right now.
Gotcha. So mm-hmm. moving forward, you know, the big one that you're working on now is this YouTube series. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to briefly look over a couple of them, and they're extremely heavy animation.
Yeah, they are.
Let's go back, and we won't even touch on the animation. We'll just talk about what made you want to do this, and for people who aren't familiar with it, kind of fill them in on what the project is.
So as far as what made me want to start my own YouTube channel to teach design and illustration on YouTube is that I actually had the opportunity to attend Epicurrent's Winter Work Week at the end of February.
Oh, okay.
With Dan Petty and all those people there. That was my first time in California, and just being surrounded by so many great designers from the West Coast who, you know, I don't really know that many because I'm from Orlando and I've pretty much never left here. I was so inspired by a lot of the talent that I saw there. And it kind of got me thinking about what I could do to contribute to the design community, because up until recently, I was actually, my way of contributing to the community was serving on my local AIGA board. Mm-hmm. But I served on that board for 2 years, and I kind of gave up my position to move on and sort of focus on more, self-guided projects and give another person an opportunity to be on the board. So it had been a while since I felt like I'd contributed anything to the community. And I really do have a heart for teaching, because I've had so many great mentors that have, you know, poured into me and saw my potential and really guided me along. And so I felt like it was kind of my responsibility to take the knowledge that I've learned or that I've gained over the years and sort of share it with new people that are just getting started in design and illustration. Mm-hmm. So I decided on a whim, not really a whim, I guess, but I decided to finally stop making excuses and just do it and throw the video up. And I actually put a tweet out on Twitter that got a lot of traction, basically letting people know that there weren't a lot of diverse faces in design education on YouTube, as far as I could tell, which I thought, you know, hey, I'm Black and I'm a girl and I can do something about it too. So I let people know what my plan was, and it got retweeted, I think maybe like 150 times, which isn't a lot compared to what it could be, but it's a lot for my account that I barely use. So, people have been really supportive, and, you know, once people seemed excited about it, I was like, well, I guess I kind of have to do it now too and keep it up. So it's just been a, go ahead.
No, you keep going.
No, I was gonna say, it's just been like another learning opportunity, because now I'm learning about speaking in front of a camera and video editing and kind of honing my illustration and animation skills in a way that I can actually teach someone. Like, there's things that I know, but actually articulating what I'm doing when I'm doing it is a new skill to build too. So
sure. It's
just been a challenge for me and something that I've welcomed, and I'm really excited about continuing.
Gotcha. Well, excuse me. You know, with that, with the lack of diversity, especially with people of color and women in general, kind of out there in that, what are things that you think can be done, or would you like to see be done to empower more people to take that opportunity and do something similar?
As far as what can be done, I think it's just a matter of, if you are someone in a position that where you can uplift someone that may be underrepresented in your industry, just do it. Don't wait for permission to do it. I think a lot of what people need when they're underrepresented is just a chance and someone that's sort of like a champion for them and kind of validates what they want to do. At the same time, you shouldn't wait to be validated, but it does help to have someone that kind of gives you a thumbs up and says, you know, what you want to do is something good. So I think that's one thing. And then also just going back to mentorship and being a mentor to people and not hoarding the knowledge that you've gained. If you're in a position where you've been in the industry for several years and you have knowledge to share, just willingly sharing that knowledge with people that may not know as much as you. I think that's just so important, because that's how I've learned everything I know, is from, you know, people being willing to share the knowledge that they have in their head and put it out in the open.
Gotcha. So, and with this kind of passion for teaching and helping mentor others, is this something in the future that you'd like to expand out into other roles?
As far as like being a mentor, or what do you
I mean, as far as being a mentor in general, but I mean, is this something that, I guess, is this something you'd like to take to kids and kind of show them how to do it? Or do you want to?
Oh, no, definitely. I think, that's why I'm trying to find a good balance on my channel between, you know, being very, very beginner level tutorials and then also being something a little bit more advanced for people that are, they've already started in illustration or animation, but they want to improve. I think my goal, my main goal with the channel is to inspire younger generations. So people that are in middle school or in high school that might just be on YouTube or might just be getting started with these programs like I did in middle school. Mm-hmm. And to see someone that looks like them and say, hey, you know what? I could have a career in this too. She's been able to do it. And this is something that interests me. And, I'm able to learn on my own. So I definitely want to inspire younger people, but anybody can consume the content that sees it, obviously.
Sure. Well, I mean, I feel like you kind of had a leg up in that stepping stone, having it literally right in your house with you.
Yeah.
You know, when your mom's a designer and your dad's a developer or web programmer, you know, you've got that. But for people who don't necessarily have that in their backyard or readily available, how do you try to pass that on? How do you try to grow that?
I think it's just about exposure, because I think a lot of kids spend so much time on the internet nowadays. And I don't know, just thinking about the kind of kid that I was looking up tutorials about how to do stuff. Like I would see something online, or I'd see like a specific photography technique or a specific drawing technique. And I would literally Google how to, you know, do this.
Sure.
So my hope is that a kid or a young adult will be on YouTube one day and say, how do I draw, you know, a rainbow, or how do I draw a sun, and come across my content? I'm not sure if I answered your question, but
no, that's good.
Yeah.
So kind of diving into the subject matter, you know, excuse me, a lot of what you focus on isn't necessarily what you do professionally for a living. I noticed through talking, this is, you know, stuff that you've recently learned and learned on your own. You know, how challenging or how difficult that is, that to stay ahead of that curve, to be able to teach that while still learning the intricacies and building upon what you know?
Well, I think that's one of the things they say is that the best way to learn something is to teach it.
Okay.
I have a ton of ideas for videos that I want to produce, but I always try to look up and research if I'm doing it in a way that's efficient, that will translate well to teaching. So, I think that there's always going to be someone, obviously, that knows less than me. So I think no matter what I teach, it's going to be valuable to someone, because everyone's at different stages in their career or in their creative life. So I'm not too concerned about staying ahead of the curve, but I do want to produce content that is engaging and entertaining and doesn't get boring.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean to interrupt, but when I say staying ahead of the curve, I really mean staying ahead of your own curve of where you're teaching at, and not biting off more than you can chew at the time, you know, and struggling to come up with and explain things.
Oh, you know, I see what you're saying. That's one of the good things about having your own channel, is that you can set your own schedule and you can release content when you want. So if you look at my channel, you'll notice that I haven't committed to any upload schedules or anything like that. It's just something that I'm doing at my own pace.
Sure.
Trying to build up a good library of content before I really promote it too hard. But yeah, my personality is definitely one where when I'm doing something, I do it with my full heart. And so it can be kind of hard for me to not want to go full force and just want to share everything that I'm producing and make a new video every day and upload 7 videos a week. But I know what my boundaries are and what I can handle and the amount of stress that I can afford to have in my life. So I'm definitely not going to do anything that's more than I can handle, but
I'm sure your husband's appreciative of that too. He'd probably like, he'd probably like to see you at some point. So as you're teaching it, 'cause I think you have like 7 or 8 videos up now.
I think I only have 4, honestly.
Oh,
I think, maybe 4 or 5.
Anyways, you know, when you're finding the new topic that you want to dive into for that video, how do you go about that? How do you determine, because like you said, you've got a ton of ideas of ones that you want to do. How are you whittling down and determining which ones are right at the time?
I wish I had a good answer for you, but I don't really have a real strategy at this point. It's kind of just going down this list of ideas that I have. Mm-hmm. Because eventually I want it to evolve into more than just tutorials. I want it to be, I want it to be time lapses where you can see my process, actual spoken tutorials where you can, you know, walk through the exercise with me and learn on your own. But then eventually I also want to have, career advice, mm-hmm. and, just more heart to heart information that would be beneficial to people that are starting in their design careers too. So I want it to expand to be more than just tutorials, but at the same time, I don't want to bite off more than I can chew starting out. Mm-hmm. So maybe a year from now, it will look completely different from what it is currently, but,
Well, I would say if you are doing the exact same thing of how you planned it a year from now, you've done something wrong.
That's true.
Because I mean, I say that knowing from, you know, my own experience with like starting this podcast. Mm-hmm. When I started out, I had one idea of how this was going to go. Mm-hmm. And then I've been doing it for 2 years now, and or a little over 2 years now. And, you know, it's gone in a very different direction than where I saw it going initially. Now, mm-hmm. there's still core elements that are the same. I knew I wanted to do like an interview show. I wanted mm-hmm. to, you know, have conversations with designers and other people in the industry. That much has stayed the same, but the way I interview, the how I do it, you know, learning how to adapt to different situations has definitely evolved through that. So I think, mm-hmm. you know, I think with what you're doing, that I would hope that as you grow and learn more stuff, that will happen to you.
Yeah, definitely.
Unless you have like the world's best plan out there, then stick to it and completely yeah. ignore what I've said.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it's also just about seeing how people respond to the content that I produce and, you know, going with what people express interest in and what is most beneficial to the people that are learning from me. So
sure.
Once I get more content up, I can actually have some data and, you know, see what would be the best next steps.
Well, that's what I'm curious about, because with mentoring and teaching through YouTube, I mean, you can get data points back and people can leave comments and things like that, but mm-hmm. it's not the same as doing it face to face and one-on-one. Mm-hmm. How are you when you're preparing for the next one, taking what you've seen up until this point and mm-hmm. applying and learning from that for the next video?
No, well, I actually have a really good example of that. So on, I think it was either my last video or the one before, I produced this video and I got really good feedback as far as like the actual content in the video. But there were some people that offered constructive criticism and said, you know, you did this way, but it would be easier if you would have done it this way. Mm-hmm. And so in my next video, my plan is to take those comments and show, basically show those different methods that people told me in the comments and kind of point out to someone that also may not have known, like I didn't know.
Sure.
Hey, this is what you want to achieve. Here's two additional ways that you could do it. Gotcha. And there's pros and cons of doing it this way or that way. But, I'm just taking the feedback that people give me and applying it to the videos that I put together.
Gotcha. When, mm-hmm. when you eventually get to the point where you've expanded out into kind of the other areas that you want to touch on, what are your hopes for the long term of things? Is this something that you want to remain online, or would you like to go around doing workshops? What would you like to do?
I think I'm open to both options. Sure. Doing workshops is fun for me because the same thing with this YouTube channel where it's a challenge to me. I appreciate the challenge, even though it might stress me out in the moment of actually doing it, because I do consider myself to be very introverted. And so speaking in front of crowds is not really something that I would elect to do sure. at this point in my life, but sure. when I do it, I enjoy it. Like I said, I like teaching. I have a heart for teaching. So any opportunity that I can get to impart the knowledge that I have onto someone else is, it's welcome for
gotcha.
Me.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So this will have already happened by the time this goes up, but you're going to be at Creative South mm-hmm. and teaching a workshop there on all of this stuff. When you're preparing to teach in front of an audience versus when you're preparing to teach something where you have the ability to go in and do multiple takes and edits mm-hmm. and, you know, if you get cotton mouth, you can go get something to drink. Not that you can't at a workshop, I guess that's not a good example. But how are you, what's the difference in your preparation style for the two?
I think they're both pretty much the same, as I over-prepare.
Gotcha.
So I do everything that I can to ensure that I don't run into a situation where I don't know what I'm talking about, or I get, you know, tripped up on my words. Mm-hmm. I think even though I said the whole thing about being an introvert and talking in front of crowds is not really my favorite thing to do, I do think it's easier than recording a video, because a video for YouTube has the potential to be seen by a much larger audience.
Sure.
So while it may not have that much views now, it's on the internet forever. And eventually, you know, people can come across and see it. If I make a mistake at a workshop, you know, it's that one day and people probably forget about it within the next hour or so.
Oh, we didn't tell you we're recording it live and
really?
We're going to stream it, everything. No,
that's fine.
No, we're not. It'd be cool if we could, but no, that might get a little pricey. Mm-hmm. You know, as you're growing and learning more things and taking on new challenges for yourself, how are you striking that balance between I want to do everything and I can't do everything and mm-hmm. still have, healthy marriage and free time and sleep and all that stuff?
I feel like, so one of my things going from my last job to my current job at NV Labs is that I really made an effort that I wanted to maintain a proper work-life balance. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't work on any, job work on the weekends if I don't have to. I don't have my job email on my phone. So I definitely have a separation between my work life and my, you know, life. Uh-huh. And I do make a conscious effort not to let those two things overlap too much. The stuff that I do for YouTube and all these other side projects that I have, it's stuff that I genuinely like doing. So I don't have any problem working on it on the weekend or in my free time. Mm-hmm. But I do also know, you know, when to stop, when to cut it off. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's one positive thing that I've been able to learn, is just that it's important to have that work-life balance and not get too bogged down with things.
Sure. I definitely agree with that. Uh-huh. I've made the mistake of getting too bogged down before. I can.
Yeah. I've been there before understand. And it's not fun.
No. You know, we're kind of getting close to our time, but I'm curious, you know, what's something that you're really looking forward to or wanting to do in the future, in just the near future, not even like 5 years from now, because nobody knows what they're going to do 5 years from now. And I hate that question.
What am I looking forward to? I know we already talked about the YouTube channel a lot, but I am just really looking forward to, I'm not looking to gain like any design points or notoriety from my channel at all. I really just want to do something that's going to benefit others. Mm-hmm. I think that's just kind of where I live. I thoroughly enjoy doing stuff that'll benefit and uplift others. Mm-hmm. So in whatever capacity that ends up being, whether it's continuing my YouTube channel or some other opportunity that comes up, or workshops and other opportunities to impart knowledge, that's pretty much my next thing that I want to focus on with this coming year and years to come. So
awesome. Well, real quickly, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Dribbble @_AyanaCampbell. I'm also at Twitter @_AyanaCampbell. And then my YouTube channel, if you just search Ayanna Campbell Smith, you should be able to find me.
And we'll put all these links in the show notes so people can find them too.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Ayana, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And go out and hug some necks.
Okay, I will.
You can find out more about Ayana on Twitter at @_AyanaCampbell. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with her. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at @CreativeSOPod. And follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at @CreativeSouthGA over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code SOUTH15OFF at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code Creative South. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.